No, thank you. Sleepy. Can you come back in an hour?
Need sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God!
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligiuri. It's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's doing okay. We're glad you could be part of our morning, and of course, we're glad to be part of yours. Special shout out to all of our viewers on Fight TV. And don't forget, if you're on the go, like most of us are, and the way life is today, watch our show on the Fight TV app. That's right, you can watch our show on your handheld very easily, on your phone. You know, listen to it, watch it while you're driving. Just pay attention to the road. Check it out. Go to fight.tv. That's FITE.TV/Billy C. Download the app for free right now and enjoy our show forever for free. And by the way, there's some other shows on Fight TV, and it's a great stop for specialty combat sports events that you can purchase at a low, low price. So check out Fight TV. It's an app that is storming the sports world. Check it out. Fight.tv/Billy C. Today's show is being brought to us in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria and Italian Restaurant, located on St. Simon's Island, Georgia. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Or give my man a call, 912-268-2328. 912-268-2328. Don't forget, if you're heading south for the winter, or just heading south to get the hell out of the cold weather, and if you're traveling on I-95, you can go to Sal's and enjoy a great meal. It's 15 minutes out of your way off of I-95. Easy on, easy off, and that includes stopping for a couple of lights. So if you decide to run the red lights, you'll get to Sal's even quicker. Go to the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com, and get the address. If you need any other information, feel free to email me, Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by the Turning Stone and their next big boxing event, which is taking place on March 11th. It's a Saturday. It's an HBO After Dark event, and I'm going to be ringside, and I want you to be there too. Get yourself some tickets real easy. Visit our website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the fight poster for the David Lemieux Curtis Stevens. That's the main event on that card, and there's some other great fights on that card as well. If you've been waiting for a great fight card to come to the Turning Stone to go and watch, that's the one to do it. Plus, I'm going to be there. So, you know, you could buy me a couple of scotches, you know. So get your tickets today. Tell them Billy C sent you. And finally, today's show is being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Mono, From Bondage to the Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all good books are sold. No, wait. Where all great books are sold. You can get a copy of it right now while you're watching or listening to the show by going to BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. And by the way, it's Black History Month. What a perfect time to get this book and help me change history, because this is a guy, Tom Molino, who's virtually forgotten and certainly should not be. Read why I'm so adamant about getting the record set straight about my man Tom Molino. Coming up a little later, my man Larry Hazard, New Jersey Boxing Commissioner and Hall of Fame, will not be able to join us today. So I know there's a lot of big Larry Hazard fans that watch the show, but unfortunately he has a prior commitment this morning, meeting his New Jersey State Boxing Commissioner rules. So he'll be back next week. Coming up a little bit later, Alex Papali will be doing the Blast from the Past with myself, Panama Al Brown, former world champion and a Boxing Hall of Famer. What a fighter Panama Al Brown was. It was a request, actually, from one of our viewers that his grandfather was an opponent for Panama Al Brown. So Alex and I will be talking about him. We got some updates for you on Deontay Wilder. and his court case on Kell Brook, Errol Spence. Who can deny that Kell Brook literally fights the best out there? And for that matter, so does Errol Spence. We'll talk about that. Manny Pacquiao against Tom Horn, or maybe not. We'll talk about that. The WBA trying desperately to get their title situation under control is just what a smokescreen they're giving us. But today, main topic, a lot in the news about Floyd Mayweather against Conor McGregor. Some sources are saying that this fight is signed, sealed, and delivered and will be taking place in September. According to Floyd Mayweather, he says no deal has been made. According to Dana White, he says no deal has been made. And I got some quotes from the Nevada State Athletic Commission concerning this. My immediate thought is the same as what I've been saying. Floyd Mayweather, listen, I'm not a huge fan of Floyd. You guys know that. But, he's one of the, he is, if not one of, he is the best fighter pound for pound of his era. Now, I strongly believe that he's nowhere near the best fighter of all time, not even close, but of his era. It would be tough to argue that he's not the top fighter, being undefeated, etc., etc. Conor McGregor, obviously a big star for the UFC in the MMA world. But make no mistake, Conor McGregor has never fought a professional fight. Not once has he fought a professional fight. And to suggest that he steps in the ring with not only arguably the pound-for-pound best fighter of today, but self-proclaimed best fighter of all time, the best ever, if you will, for Floyd's 50th record-setting win is bullshit. It's not a boxing match. Have you seen footage of Conor McGregor fight? He looks like a kid in a gym that put on a pair of gloves for the very first time. No disrespect to him and his MMA career, but as a boxer, how the hell can you put a pro debut boxer against a guy who's arguably the pound for pound and count it as a boxing match? I think it's absurd. This isn't boxing. It's the WWE. Joining me right now, from a place that's a hell of a lot warmer than where I'm sitting, is my man. Now, this guy's got a closet full of titles. Now, I'm just going to mention a couple. How about the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Famer? How about a Guinness Book of World Record holder? How about one of the best restaurant owners that puts out the best food I've ever eaten? And he's a real nice guy, too. And he's my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, please welcome the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Sal Rocky Senicola. What's up, Sal?
Good morning, my friend Billy C. How are you today?
Not too bad, man. I'm all jacked up.
I'll tell you what. I can't have anything less than a spectacular day after getting an introduction to the world by you in that manner. Unbelievable. Well, I'll tell you, I got to double my pay for you.
I'll tell you what. Here's the thing. You know, Monday, Mondays are tough, man. You know,
Mondays are tough, man. I mean,
Monday we come on and it was like, here we go, you know. We had a couple of good fights to talk about. The Baranchak fight beating Abel Ramos was a very exciting fight. I mean, we talked about that. We're in that period of the sports world where football's not happening. I'm not a huge NBA fan. The college hoops tournaments are just getting underway. So, I mean, you know, I wasn't, I don't know. The blood wasn't flowing on Monday. But let me tell you, it's certainly flowing today. And, we got Mayweather-McGregor in the news. And you know something? I just want to start off by saying this, Sal. I don't have a problem with Floyd fighting McGregor. I really don't. I mean, for the amount of money that could be made for everyone that's involved, and just for the curiosity factor, I'm sure there's a lot of interest. It might even break all the pay-per-view records. I get it, you know? I mean, I understand that from a business perspective. But from a purist, from a boxing purist perspective, I think it's a travesty that people, first of all, that a commission would allow Floyd Mayweather, who's got 49 professional fights against no losses, who's arguably the best pound-for-pound fighter in his era, take on a guy that's never put on a pair of boxing gloves and actually count it as a legitimate boxing match. This is more of a WWE situation. What's your quick thoughts?
Well, it is, and I'm going to tell you right now, you know my favorite term. This is all the arena of drama creating with the fluff and not the stuff. And I'll tell you right now, yes, McGregor, respectfully I do say, he's a MMA fighter, he's great, whatever he does there, I've never even seen him fight. But the bottom line is, as far as a boxing and purist, and as you and I claim we are, and are passionate about, yes, it's a fight that I do not think warrants a title or a notch in Mayweather's gun as far as his 50th win without any asterisks or anything else like that, because I don't see it. And you need a guy that has been proven in a ring, and this fight's going to go either way. And I mean, McGregor, the only luck he's going to have, and I say luck, is landing a big blow that's going to put Mayweather a little senseless for a while, and he might get hurt, but more than likely, the fight's going to go where Mayweather's just going to put on his display of tapping, running, and hitting, and moving, and avoiding his punches, and he's going to outbox McGregor, and probably, maybe he'll even get a knockout, because McGregor hasn't been hit by a boxer with combinations, or an invasive fighter. So, is it going to be entertaining for the Crip fans? It may be for a couple of rounds, but like I said, it doesn't warrant what the whole big legendary career is going to want to have a signature from Mayweather to be all about.
What really gets me, first of all,
it's upsetting for
anybody out there that hasn't seen, because there is some video up on YouTube of Conor McGregor boxing, and it looks like what you see when if you've ever been in a gym. When a kid or somebody puts on the gloves for the first time and gets inside the squared circle, even a kid that's been working on throwing punches, hitting the bag and stuff like that, working with a coach, the first time you ever see them get in the ring, you know, with their adrenaline going and stuff, they're wild. They're all over the place. They look like a caveman swinging, if you will. That's Conor
their heads
McGregor
up too. Their chin's weighed up in the air.
I mean, that's Conor McGregor, Sal. You know, and
Mayweather's gonna pick him apart.
Pick him apart. I mean, listen, everybody knows I'm not a big fan of Mayweather, but I gotta give Floyd Mayweather credit. You know, when you have
a guy, take
a guy like Marcos Maidana, right? This is a guy that is a wild fighter, but he's still a boxer. You know, yes, what you said is true with a guy like him. You know, Marcos did connect a couple of shots to Mayweather, but I'm telling you, McGregor won't land one. He won't land one, and he'll be winded if this fight ever takes place after one or two rounds.
I'm with you.
I mean, it's for people to say it's a joke, well, let me give you some quotes, and then you can make some comments. First of all, similar to when the negotiations were going on for Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, you know, every day we heard Floyd, there's no fight. Oh, it's none of this, none of that. And all of a sudden, poof, the fight was there. Well, Floyd commented yesterday on an Instagram post saying that no deal has been made. Now, he didn't say the fight's not going to happen. What he said was no deal to fight Conor McGregor or anyone else has been made. He says he's happily retired. Then Dana White posted his comment first. He said a deal between Mayweather and McGregor is no deal is even close to being made. He said it's not even close to being done. But what made things a little more confusing was Stephen A. Smith, the loudmouth ESPN guy who I find comical but doesn't know too much about boxing, except he is buddies with Mayweather. He said on Saturday that he and Mayweather, now he said this Tuesday, that on Saturday he and Mayweather were hanging out watching a NBA game in Oklahoma City, specifically the Warriors and the Thunder, and he said on air yesterday that Floyd told him that we're getting very, his quote, we're getting very, very close to the fight, and referring to McGregor and Mayweather. Now, the Nevada State Athletic Commission chairman, Anthony Marnell, had made some confirmations yesterday. And I got some quotes for you, Sal. Marnell said that, first of all, there are negotiations taking place that have been presented to the Nevada State Athletic Commission. So he says those are true. He said, and I quote, there's a lot of real stuff going on. It seems like a long shot for this fight to happen, but when there's a lot of money involved, people tend to figure it out. There's a lot of cooks in this kitchen, but I'm not sure we're going to eat. The Nevada Athletic Commission, in my experience, this is Anthony Marnell, has always been well briefed by all the parties on an event or a potential event that take place in Las Vegas. We're well aware of the conversations and information that are being disclosed and not being disclosed to the media. Whether these conversations get to a point where a fight will happen, I can't tell you. He also, after McGregor is demanding $100 million, Dana White offered Mayweather and McGregor $25 million. Mayweather laughed and said, is he a effing comedian? You know, McGregor does have a boxing license in the state of California, but that has nothing to do with Nevada. Dana White said that because comments that were made by Conor McGregor saying, I don't need the UFC, I'll make this fight on my own. And, you know, Dana White says, yeah, he said that, but trust me, he can't do this without us. If he tries to leave the UFC, he's going to fall hard. And Marnell continued to say that he's confirming that real people are having real discussions about this fight. He's telling people, in his opinion, that the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Nevada State Athletic Commission says that there's a lot of things that need to get done in order to see like a fight like this come together. Because there's so many parties that want to get their hands on the money, maybe it'll be figured out, but it's going to be hard when everyone's declaring they want $100 million, because that's what everyone's saying. He said, that's not what I said, that's what they're saying. He said, that's their quotes, not mine. If everyone wants, and I love this line from Anthony Marnell, if everyone wants $100 million, that's a lot of $100 million to go around. You know, which I think is true. Quickly, Sal, I think that the sad truth is I think that the fight's going to happen. I would, if you asked me this any time up until the last couple of weeks, I would have laughed at you, and I have laughed at people. But I think that this fight's going to happen because there are fans that want to see it. There are idiots that believe that McGregor has a shot. But my biggest concern, and Floyd's even said that the fight would be at 154. You know, my biggest concern really for the goodness of the sport of boxing, they have to make this an exhibition. They can't possibly make it a regular fight that counts as Floyd's 50th win. To me, that's a travesty for the sport of boxing. What's your thoughts on the way these negotiations are going, or comments from Marnell and the amount of money these parties are all asking, and of course, what I closed with you know, this being counted as a legitimate boxing match?
Well, like I said earlier, this is all the fluff. This is all the drama. This is all the rhetoric. This is all you're going to hear. And then all of a sudden, we're going to wake up one day, and it's all going to be signed, sealed, and delivered, and negotiated, and worked out, and we are going to see a fight like this. And I'm going to be concerned because, as you say, I share your thoughts. I don't think it warrants to be a real fight, other than an exhibition or other than something else. But again, you make the biggest point. This guy's never had a professional boxing match. I don't even know if he had amateur fights, but the bottom line is, it's going to be hard to say. They're going to be able to sell it, but to say that a fight of this magnitude qualifies under the jurisdiction and the Marcus of Queensbury rules to be a legit documented fight that's going to go down in the history books for Mayweather's 50th victory.
Well,
I don't like it.
Well, for a commission that's got a you know, good reputation with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. For them to allow this fight to take place based on the experience alone. I mean, if you presented a fight, and I got to be honest with you, Sal, if you took a guy that was a well-accomplished amateur, all right, even with a, several hundred fights as an amateur, and virtually never lost, you know, a Lomachenko type
Lomachenko,
guy.
Lomachenko, so you're feeding right into a perfect example right there.
But even if you take a guy like that, I would be shocked if a reputable commission like the Nevada State Athletic Commission, or for that matter, like the state of New York or New Jersey or California, Chicago, would approve a fight between a 49-0 guy against a pro debut. I don't care what the amateur career is. I don't care what the MMA career is. You know, you're still putting an amateur in against a 49-0 guy. They would require, at least require, even if you were the best amateur, the most decorated amateur, they would at least require a fight or two prior. I mean, when Lomachenko fought, you know, what was it? Didn't he have, he had like, when he fought
400 wins or something.
No, I know, but I mean, when he fought for a title, I mean, it was like in his fifth or sixth fight, but still, he had, you know, four or five fights under his belt. You know, yes. Conor McGregor is not going to be able to accomplish two fights before the fight. The wording that Mayweather keeps putting out, no deal has been reached yet. No deal has been reached. No deal has been reached. No deal has been reached. That tells me that they're working on the particulars for a fight to happen.
Working on a deal.
You know, if he was saying this fight's never going to happen, you know, I'd feel a little better than no deal has been reached. No deal because nobody's accepted the offers that each other's throwing around. You know,
and
so
we know that Mayweather's going to have it tailored to his specific needs, desires, and grants and wants.
Of course, and that's the whole part about Nevada. Because Floyd's not going to fight anywhere other than the state of Nevada. No. You know, I can't see Floyd going to Cal. Listen, he's already got a boxing license, he meaning Conor McGregor, in the state of California. But I can't see Floyd going to California. I just don't. No. What's your thoughts, everyone? Drop me an email, Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor, should it count? I mean, you know, yeah, it's a WWE-type fight. Yeah, there's people that are interested in it. It is a curiosity-type fight. But should it count as Floyd's 50th win? I don't know. Hey, some other... Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was going to say, you know, I could see this being promoted and having the big showmanship and circus act that it was. It would be, you could title it, hey, when worlds collide, boom! And yeah, create the excitement, create the stimulating atmosphere, and you'll have everybody wanting to tune in and possibly pay for it because it would be something unique. But as you have said, and as I agree, it should not warrant and be documented as Floyd Mayweather's 50th professional boxing win.
I think it's sad, and I think overall it sets the sport of boxing back. I mean, you know, there's clearly no connection. Well, there's somewhat of a connection, but there's clearly a huge difference between MMA and boxing. And I don't have a problem with crossover fights. I mean, look at Holly Holm. She went and beat, you know, arguably the best female UFC fighter at the time. And but she went and fought, you know, double-digit MMA fights before she got that shot. So it wasn't like they threw her right in, you know, and that's what they would need to do with Conor McGregor. I'm sorry. You know, if he's just going for the paycheck, that's not fair to the people that shell out the money for the pay-per-view. You know, if he truly wants to beat Floyd, then I would think he would focus on boxing, which would include a couple of fights.
This is Andre the Giant versus Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, or the big sumo wrestler that Ali fought, you know. But anyway, let's talk about two real fighters. How about Kell Brook, arguably a guy that clearly does not duck anyone and wants to make the biggest fights, just like he and his promoter, Eddie Hearn, has said all along. Kell Brook proved that to us when he went up not one but two weight classes to fight the best middleweight on the planet today in Triple G. And it was announced yesterday that a fight for Kell Brook's IBF World Welterweight title. So now this is Kell Brook again going from 160 down back down to 147, which I honestly thought that he could never make again. Going up against what a lot of people feel, is really the best welterweight out there today in Errol Spence Jr. This fight will be taking place at the end of May. No exact date or location has been announced yet, but Eddie Hearn announced yesterday that the fight has been signed, sealed, and delivered, and it will be taking place in the UK, and it will be taking place at the end of May. I applaud both Kell Brook and Errol Spence, who seem to be trying to take matters in their own hands, Sal, and turn what has become a farce in the sport of boxing and put two guys that are in their prime, that have a legitimate gripe on who is the best fighter in that division, fighting each other. Isn't that what this sport's all about, Sal?
Absolutely. This is prize fighting at its best. And, you know, I also like the idea that Kell Brook, you notice he's not going to get a tune-up fight in between his last fight where he had his eye socket broken. I mean, this is good. You're jumping right into the ring, and you're going to go against the best. That's where these guys challenge themselves, because they feel they are the best. And what stops you from claiming that you are the best is when two of the best fighters in a weight division get in the ring together for the battle of the bragging rights and just to put it on and get it out there and do it. So I applaud both of these champions, and I call them both champions.
Well, Errol Spence, had a amateur career, very highly decorated amateur career, grabbed the medal in the Olympics, and Kell Brook, a monster. I love the fight. And I love it.
And I say champion, because they're champion in the heart, champion in the head, and this is what we want to see. They both have the accolades as being great, great fighters, and this is what we're going to see. You want to talk about when worlds collide? These are two different worlds that they live in their own sphere of influence, and we're going to have them get in the ring, and it's going to be a great, great fight. I can't wait to see this fight.
Yeah, me neither. May can't come quick enough. We got a lot of stuff happening before then. I got a bunch of emails I want to read, but I want to get you updated. Deontay Wilder.
Deontay!
He wins the court case. I'm shocked that he won this court case. $5 million.
Hey, his attorneys.
$5 million over his claim that he lost a huge payday because of Alexander Povetkin testing positive for a performance-enhancing drug. Obviously, Povetkin's team will appeal the decision. I think it's kind of ridiculous because, you know, Deontay Wilder has actually earned a payday and will be earning a second payday since that fight. Also, the positive test that he had, the lawsuit was the test that was a trace of something that was newly removed from the ban list. I'm shocked that he was awarded this case, but nonetheless, he won, and now he doesn't have to fight a quality fighter like Alexander Povetkin. However, I do feel that Alexander Povetkin, if he is a cheater, he should be banned from the sport altogether. I just want Wilder to fight a real fight. That's it. That's all I'm asking from Wilder. You know, the fight against Gerald Washington next week is not a real fight. Gerald Washington is not ready. The only thing we're going to get is two big guys. Washington doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the skill set. And Wilder's trying to make it like it's going to be two big guys fighting each other. Somebody's going to be yelling timber, blah, blah, blah. You know, Wilder continues to pound his chest, Sal. And I love that he's got so much confidence. I love that he's always in shape, because he certainly is. I know that he works hard. I know as a human being he's a good guy. But he's definitely not the best heavyweight in the world today.
No, and like I said so many times before, you know, a lot of the believability as far as, you know, here he is feeling he's the, you know, baddest guy on the planet in the heavyweight division. A lot of it is coming from his team and promoting him and everything else and patting him on the back and all that. But, you know, he's got to have in his mind and his heart of hearts, he's going to have to step up and see if it is all the reality of what he thinks in his world that it is. And he's going to have to challenge himself. He's going to have to step in the ring with a big name and a big fighter.
Yeah, well, he can't. He will never beat Luis Ortiz. He will never beat Anthony Joshua. He will never beat Vladimir Klitschko. I mean, you know, any of the top heavyweights, Deontay Wilder doesn't have a chance against. And his team knows it. That's why they keep feeding him these cupcakes. Anyway.
Well, you said it right there. His team knows it. And it's like the old movie, The Harder They Fall. You know, you want to elongate your commodities career because everyone feeds off the money from that. And, you know, one day they're going to have to face the fire and put him in and he'll be dethroned, if that's the case.
Well, here's a joke. Because, you know, he wants to grab another title. Because if he gets another title, he's going to be regarded as, you know, a unified champion. The WBA, who claims that they're trying to clean up their champions, had a purse bid for Shannon Briggs, who has no business fighting for a world title, against Fraser Quedno, who definitely doesn't have a chance. He hasn't fought since 2014. You know, these two guys were actually somehow, when they took the coffee can full of bums and they shook out the two that were going to fight for their vacated title, the regular title, by the way, because the super title's on the line for Klitschko and Anthony Joshua. They had a purse bid the other day. And Revolta Promotions, well, actually Henry Revolta from the Heavyweight Factory Promotions, presented a bid that was the highest bid for this fight. This goes to show you how little interest there is. $400,000, which for a heavyweight fight, a world title fight, is kind of low. So you would think that you know, the Heavyweight Factory wins the opportunity to promote this fight, right? I mean, they were the high bidder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a little asterisk there. According to the WBA, for a heavyweight fight, for a heavyweight world championship, in order to have that fight happen, you got to bid no less than $1 million. So now, who the hell knows what's going to happen, and who cares? One last thing I wanted to mention before we read a couple of emails is Manny Pacquiao. I mean, everybody was saying that he's going to be fighting in the land down under in Australia against Jeff Horn. And this fight was most likely going to take place in April. Well, then it was looking like Manny Pacquiao got a better financial offer to fight in Dubai, which is kind of shocking to Team Jeff Horn, who raised a lot of money, got governmental support and everything else to have this fight in Australia. Now, it appears that Manny Pacquiao might not even be fighting Jeff Horn because based on the public poll that was taken, nobody wants to see that fight, including myself. Nobody wants to see it. But guess who comes out on top that the fans want to see Manny Pacquiao fight? Because they wanted to see him fight Kell Brook, but Kell Brook now obviously is fighting Errol Spence.
Yeah.
But who do you think, out of all the fighters, that the public wants to see Manny Pacquiao fight?
I can only guess. Mayweather.
Well, that's who I think should fight.
Well, you and I both feel that way. That's the only fight either fighter should face.
Well, they are talking about the fight taking place in April in Dubai against Amir Khan. Now, Amir Khan was looking to get way too much money for this fight. Maybe he's come down to earth. But how does a guy like Amir Khan keep getting all these shots? I mean, obviously he must have...
Just look at the name.
I know. But I mean, he must have a bigger draw. I didn't think the Jeff Horn fight made any sense to Manny Pacquiao, except for the money that was being tossed as his way.
I agree with you. And, you know, it's upsetting because, you know, Manny's had a spectacular career. He's a great guy, great fighter, and... You know, like I said, he's been to the mountain and back. I mean, the only fight that makes the sense that you and I always talk about is just him fighting Mayweather. Get it on, get it done, and get out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a joke. Well, we got some emails to read, Sal. So let's get going. We got Jesse says, "Hey, Billy C, I agree that Roy Jones should have retired 10 years ago. He's great and should be involved in the sport as a trainer and a promoter. I don't want anything to happen to Roy. I don't want to see tragic stories anymore of boxers such as Valero. You know, that's almost a forgotten guy. Edwin Valero was a guy on the fast track, man, and then ended up committing suicide. Michael Nunn, for all you guys that are too young to have seen Michael Nunn.
I remember that.
I loved Michael, second to Nunn, and he's in tough shape right now. He refers to Johnny Tapia, Arturo Gatti, etc., and I think Jesse has a good point. He says, I would vote for Crawford to fight Manny next, and then my second choice is Kell Brooks. He should be ashamed that the fans are not for Horn. Well, he should be ashamed. The fans are not for Horn. Yeah, no, I know. And, Crawford was a good matchup, but he was also scheduled to fight already. So, as you're shaking those fighters out, Jess, Amir Khan looks like he's at the top. He says, Billy, when you're in those little shows like in Oklahoma, you probably won't get the best medical attention because they're low-budget shows. Well, that was my whole point about, having these commissions all be on the same page in terms of rules, regulations, medical requirements, doctor requirements, etc. You know, just because a smaller commission is cheaper to run a show, why should the fighter's health be at risk for that? Sal, you feel strongly about that, don't you?
I do. I feel very strongly about that because, it is the fighters, their health. They got to live and be taken care of either by themselves or by somebody else the rest of their lives. And, definitely, it's got to be a competent professional commission with the resources for medical attention to be needed and to be there, to be observing the fight, and to be readily available to come to a fighter's aid if needed.
Jesse says, I would also like to see Ivan Baranchuk against Anthony Pettersson, Mike Reed, Maurice Hooker, Joel Diaz, or Mario Barrios. What's your thoughts on these opponents? Baranchuk is still a little raw, I think. I mean, Anthony Pettersson is a very underrated fighter. Mike Reed might be a good matchup. Maurice Hooker might be a good matchup. Mario Barrios, that's actually a good matchup because Mario's been coddled so long. Joel Diaz might be a tough out for him, and I think he's still a work in progress. He's kind of wild. He takes too many shots. He's been down on the canvas several times. If he gets in there with a power puncher, he might not get up next time. He says, I saw the Easter bout and he looked okay, but he was versus a declining fighter in Cruz. Cruz fought hard, but should have never been in that title fight. Easter should fight Linares, Mikey Garcia, Flanagan, or Rancis Barthelemy. Supposedly, he called out Linares, Mikey, and Terry Flanagan. I thought the Warren versus Zanet was close and could have been a tie or very close for either one. There should be a rematch. I hope so. We talked about this early in the year. Rematches seem to be coming back, Sal.
I love it.
I think it's good.
So, you got to create some rivalries. You got to, and here's the thing. When you have a rematch, you're going to have a great fan base because, each fighter's fan base is going to be, strongly opinionated on what's going to be the result.
Right. No, I hear you. I hear you. We've got, for anybody that's watching or listening, I know that there's a lot of chat rooms and comment boards and stuff, but the one that we monitor and respond to is the one up on BillyCBoxing.com. So if you want to be part of that, join the crew over there. And my man Johnston just made a comment in there that I caught. He says, you guys hear that Andre Ward is helping Daniel Jacobs.
I just see that right now. Prepare
for Triple G. I say this, and no disrespect. I'm a God-fearing individual, but Jesus couldn't help Daniel Jacobs when he gets in the ring with Triple G. And Andre Ward, although I loved him and thought that, he was the best super middleweight during the Super 6 tournament, he's nowhere near that level anymore. And his antics negotiating and avoiding the rematch, which he should surely give, to Kovalev, which I felt won the fight, is a joke.
Yep.
My man Mitch says, he's actually got two emails here for me.
Okay.
And they're sent apart because some things change. He says, I don't know how close you are with old Louis DiBella, but let me say this. Deontay Wilder will definitely be tooting his horn and saying he'll never fight Povetkin, even if it was mandated. That's because if he is, and if Povetkin passes the test, he has to do it or get stripped. But that's the potential future. With his court case win, you know, I don't know. I think Povetkin really screwed up testing positive multiple times now. So, you know, my opinion, I do believe Deontay Wilder would lose to Povetkin, but I also believe that Deontay Wilder, you know, I don't think any fighter should fight a fighter that's cheating. I really
no,
don't.
No, I agree with you.
He says, as for the president, he's going to pound his chest and call the guy a cheater and still say he's the best, meaning Deontay Wilder, that he's the best heavyweight and won't have to prove it against Povetkin. He says the other big mouth is DiBella. He's made a lot of quotes, and he sent me a link to an article. Expect him to do a lot of talking for the rest of 2017, and definitely every time this comes up, he's going to call Povetkin a cheater. He says, I remember a case he won against B-Hop, and the guy couldn't stop talking about it every time I saw him. He won the case rightfully so. Hopkins was wrong and lied about it. But he says, look for Louis Boy and Deontay Wilder to bring the chatter. I agree. He says, and then the next email says, and you're going to like this. He says, well, two pieces of top news I sent you have just been trumped. And he says, no pun intended. He says, according to my man Mitch, he says, Mayweather-McGregor is a go for September. We contradict that statement, Mitch. We have seen that it's not a go. He says, whatever you do, you're going to have a loaded show to talk about. He's referring to this. He says, you'll talk about the Wilder-Povetkin case, which we did. He says, you talk about the Brook versus Spence case, which we did. He says, now you could talk about the Mayweather-McGregor fight, which we did. That's three things. He says, you got to love your job. Mitch, I do love my job, and thank you for your emails.
Mitch tell us the winning lottery numbers?
I know, he should. We got three more emails here.
There you go, Mitch.
We got three more emails here. This one's from Joel. He actually has a question for Larry, but Larry won't be on today, so we'll give Larry his question next week. He says, hey, Billy C, I got a question for you. This is probably going to disgust you. You know, I love reading an email that starts off like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's sort of like when a woman says to you, I know you're going to be mad, but, you know, oh, God, you know. But
Or a guy saying to a girl, you don't really want to go out with me, do you?
Yeah. he says, this is probably going to disgust you, but I intend to order the Lucien Boutte versus Alvarez pay-per-view next week. I'm actually looking forward to the fight, and I've always supported the Quebec boxing scene whenever it's on free TV or pay-per-view. I think Alvarez will outbox Boutte over 12 rounds, but regardless of how good Alvarez looks, it'll be close on the cards because Boutte is loved by everyone in Canada. The undercard isn't so great, but it says, I want to see. How do you and Sal see the Boutte-Alvarez fight going? Remember, Boutte is stepping up to 175 for this fight, when he's taken the majority of his fights at 168. First of all, it doesn't disgust me to buy that fight. I mean, Lucien Boutte is always an entertaining fighter, and Elder Alvarez is, in my opinion, a highly up-and-coming fighter. I think it's going to be a good test for him. Obviously, Boutte is not the same Boutte he was years ago. It's going to be interesting to see him fighting a power puncher at 175. The weak part of Lucien Boutte seems to be his chin. He fights a little nervous lately. I don't know. I've kind of been a fan of Boutte, but we'll have to see. I don't have an official prediction right now. I think it is an even fight, and I'm totally not disgusted that you're buying that fight, Joel, because I might have to buy it myself. What do you think, Sal?
I think the same, and you know, we'll have to see. You know, they definitely should draw a good crowd, and I'm interested in seeing the fight, and we'll see if Boutte's chin could hold up, and we'll see what happens. I'd like to watch that fight. I definitely will.
We got another email. This is from your man Raheem, Sal.
All right, Raheem.
We'll see what he says. He says, I've been watching Riddick Bowe fights lately, and he was a beast. I found out that Tyson was in prison during his Riddick being the world champ. How would you have seen a Tyson-Riddick Bowe matchup? I like your opinion in Sal's, and also what happened to Bowe and his boxing skills that he seemed to just not have it like Lennox Lewis did. My older brother said Bowe was his favorite and would have, and we have been watching his fights. My brother and I were debating Wilder versus Bowe, and I kept telling him that Wilder has almost a 90% knockout ratio and would move quicker. He said Bowe wins, but I think he's in a nostalgic memory mode of Riddick Bowe. Well, first of all, Riddick Bowe was a beast, and Riddick Bowe possessed all the skills to be one of the best fighters in the heavyweight division. Unfortunately, he was managed by a guy that really didn't know what the hell he was doing in Rock Newman, and he made some bad business decisions and ultimately ruined Riddick Bowe's career. As far as Mike Tyson against Riddick Bowe, Mike Tyson in his prime was a tough out for anybody. Now, when Mike Tyson fought Lennox Lewis, he had already been in jail and everything else. So, it's a tough gauge. But I will say this. In my opinion, I always thought that Riddick Bowe would have beat the crap out of Lennox Lewis. He was just as big. He was faster and stronger than Lennox Lewis. As much as I love Mike Tyson, Riddick Bowe was a beast. He had extremely fast hands and had some pop. Would have been a very entertaining fight. Mike Tyson in his prime, the Mike Tyson who fought Trevor Burbick and Larry Holmes and Pinklin Thomas, that version of Mike Tyson, I don't think anybody could have beat him. But the version after prison or even, after the Buster Douglas fight, Riddick Bowe beats him. So, it depends when that fight took place. As far as Riddick Bowe against Deontay Wilder, come on, man. There would have been no chance. First of all, Lennox Lewis destroys Deontay Wilder in 5 or 6 rounds if Lennox Lewis wanted to. Lennox Lewis's biggest problem was sometimes we saw a good version of Lennox and sometimes we didn't. But Riddick Bowe, destroy Deontay Wilder. You know what, Raheem? You got to stop drinking the Kool-Aid of what you see and hear now. Yes, Deontay Wilder has a high KO percentage, but that's because he fights bums. I mean, give me a break. Show me one good. The best guy on his resume is Artur Spitzka, and he knocked him out devastatingly. I give him credit for that fight. I guess you got to give him credit for the Berman Stavern fight too. But we later found out that Stavern was nothing, and isn't even that good at all. So, Riddick Bowe would have destroyed Deontay Wilder. No question about that. What do you think, Sal?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think Riddick Bowe would have dismantled him round after round until he was on his butt. I'm telling you. Now, Bowe in his prime, he was a great fighter. Great fighter.
We got one more email. This one's from my man Johnston. He says, hey, Billy C and Sal, you asked whether you guys should do a post-fight show on Saturday. He's referring to the Adrian Broner against the Adrian Granados fight, and also the co-main event is Anthony Peterson. No, it's Lamont Peterson, I'm sorry. Lamont Peterson against David Avanesyan fight. He says, to be perfectly honest, Now, just so you know, Johnston is on the other side of the pond, okay? He says,
yes.
To be honest, I won't be staying up until the early morning to watch that fight for selfish reasons, and I don't want to miss the show.
Well, thank you. That's very nice.
So is he saying that we shouldn't do the post-fight show because he doesn't want to stay up? Maybe he's getting a little piece of something-something from his lady, and he doesn't want to watch our post-fight show? You think that's what he's saying, Sal?
No, I don't think that. No. I just think, across the pond, what are they, 8 hours ahead or something?
Six. I mean, he could always do, what I do many times.
Yeah.
Tape the fight, and then go to sleep, get his little something-something on the side, go to sleep, wake up, and watch the fight like it's live, and then go, and by that time our post-fight show will be posted, and he can watch that too. The only thing he won't be able to do is call in. So he says, I also think Broner doesn't deserve a post-fight show.
You know what? I was almost going there. But
no. He said, no, listen, you should let me finish the sentence, because this is right up your alley. I think you wrote this sentence. Listen to what he says.
I did.
He says, I also think Broner does not deserve a post-fight show after he decided not to make the weight.
Bing, 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 that's, boom.
Hey, you didn't get your cue. Hey,
that's I'm blowing trumpets. That's great.
Let me tell you something. That's right out. That's right up your alley, Sal. Come on.
I love it.
Oh, man.
That's great.
He says, I'm completely with Sal on this one. It's a joke when these guys can't make weight. I'm a firm believer that we should go back to the original 8 weight classes, which would prevent this from happening, but that will never happen. So they should bring in a rule where they don't get paid if they fail to meet the contracted weight. Hit them where it hurts, their pocketbook. My wife, Gemma, is also a massive boxing fan, and she thinks it's a disgrace, and they should be banned and fined. Can't argue with that. He says, I will be watching a Jamie Conlan versus Yada Cardoza fight on Saturday in Belfast. Always a great atmosphere when the Irish are involved. So looking forward to that. Yeah, especially if there's some beers around. You know, you give those Irish a couple of pints and put on a boxing event, and geez, who knows? It could last for days, right, Sal?
You said it, I didn't.
I know, you really backed off of that one. Come on.
My ex was Irish.
Anyway, well, you see how that worked out.
That's what I tell you.
But anyway, I, you know, the funny thing is that I agree. I agree with Johnston's wife, because, you know, she's my fan. I'm a fan of hers more than Johnston. No, I'm only kidding. But the truth of the matter is, I agree with both Johnston and Gemma that there should be some repercussions. But, you know, here's where a fighter like Adrian Broner, who clearly, you know, he doesn't make weight for one of two reasons. Either he's physically getting bigger, or he's not working as hard. He's taking his opponent.
There's no excuse. Well, no, there is no excuse.
Well, his opponent, I'm sure he's taken lightly, because Granados is no world beater. But, you know, here's where they flew under the radar, Johnston and Gemma. The truth of the matter is he changed the contract. So it's not like they went and stepped on the scale at the weigh-in and he failed. They renegotiated the contract. Now, whether they threw Granado some more money or whatever, I don't know. But when he said, hey, you don't want to change the weight, don't take the fight. If I'm Team Granados, I walk away from the fight. I know it was a lot of money and everything else, but they would have made that money up, because Broner had more to lose than Granados if the fight doesn't happen. If Broner would go in the public and say, hey, he backed out of the fight, you know, you could turn around and say, wait a minute, this guy didn't make weight, and he was trying to make us, you know, change the weight. Now, if he would have said, forget it, I'm not fighting at that weight, then Team Broner would have had to throw him a substantial amount of money to sign. So from a financial standpoint and from a business standpoint, Adrian Granados made a mistake for just agreeing to fight at a bigger weight.
Yes. You're right. You're 100% right.
Anyway, I don't know, man.
Good evening. It's true.
It's sad, but
you know, that's my button right there. You know, you're come on, guys. Where the heck are you gonna make this kind of money in anything else you choose to do? And you can't have the discipline enough to do the calculation. You're weeks away from a fight. You got to drop this much, these many pounds a week or whatever the heck. You got to be on schedule. Get with the program, all right? No excuses.
You know, Saturday, Adrian Broner is fighting, and, you know, I know that Johnston sent us the email, and, you know, he was thinking of himself, you know, about us not doing the post-fight show because he wants to go to bed, you know. I mean, trust me, I do too. You think I want to stay up late? But we did make a commitment for 2017. To try and put on post-fight shows for all of the bigger fights. And unfortunately, I think that the Broner-Granados fight is one of the falls under that definition. So, you know, we're leaning towards doing a post-fight show. I'm curious to get a couple of more emails on that issue. So if you have any feelings on it, whether we should or really we shouldn't, now's the time to drop me an email, Billy@TalkinBoxing. That's TalkinBoxing .com. And I will make my decision over the next 24 hours or so. But we are the leader in post-fight shows when it comes to, you know, the major events. So it's something that we enjoy doing, and it really is a platform for all of you guys to call in with your thoughts. Because after the fight, you know, we give our thoughts real quick, and then it's basically your show to run. Now, I can't promise that I won't be five or six scotches into that fight come Saturday. So I may be slurring my words a bit, but I'll be here most likely. So drop me an email. Let me know what you think. Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. Hey, Sal, just as we wrap it up here with you, and which is a good thing that you played your little gazoo, because I just realized you're not going to be able to later, but final thoughts on Mayweather-McGregor. You know, I have a feeling the fight's going to happen. And, you know, I've said this many, many times, and I think what bothers me about this fight the most isn't the matchup, you know, because if you know, if Mayweather can make another $100 million for an easy night, you know, it reminds me of this, though. I think it's more of a WWE thing. I feel it should clearly not count as a pro boxing event. I think it should be an exhibition. But I can't help but hear the words that are constantly in my head when I'm talking about boxing, and Floyd Mayweather's father, when he said, which translates, because he's very hard to understand, which translates to, you just don't know boxing. That ain't boxing. You don't know boxing. Well, to me, a Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor fight ain't boxing. It's a joke. It's a WWE matchup. That's my thoughts on it. And, you know, if Floyd Mayweather Sr., you know, puts his two cents in, which most likely would be, which says, you don't know boxing, Billy C., I would say, you don't know how to speak English, Floyd Sr. But anyway, that's my opinion. What's your final thoughts on that as we sit with the fight still being negotiated, but nothing signed, sealed, and delivered as of yet?
Bill, I share your sentiments right there, man. I'm telling you, it is... not a circus act, I mean, but it is a magnitude of an event, not under the jurisdiction of where it should be placed as far as his 50th win in a sport of professional boxing. This is a good, entertaining, let's get these two guys in a ring and see what happens between both these guys, best in their own little world, and let's have the worlds collide. That's the kind of fanfare, fan-driven satisfaction and fight that we could expect. Because I don't get it. I don't want to see it count as a professional boxing match, because, you know, it's a slap in the face to all the other fighters that work hard too, that want to climb the ranks, that want to do it, that want to challenge themselves, that want to get a shot at the title, or want to be something special in the ring, that want to get a pay-per-view event, want to get a big payday. It's slapping them right in the face, saying, well, hey, we're coming over, we're going to do this. And, you know, like I said, each fighter is respected in their own world. Well, you know what? This could be an entertaining event. It could be done, and it could be done, but it should not have to be a fight that really counts as a professional boxing match.
You know, it's also, and it's a great point, but it's also a slap in the face for all those fighters that passed 50-0 and kept their career going and then ultimately lost. And, right. And make no mistake, the record here, which was significant in the heavyweight division, which now somehow, you know, has translated to every division, you know, to retire at 49-0 was the record, and never to come back. Floyd Mayweather is attempting to beat that record and come out of retirement and retire at 50. But fighters like Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., Willie Pep, and there's so many others that went way past 50-0 before they suffered their first defeat. I think it's a major slap in those faces. But
yes, anyway. That's a good point.
WWE, not boxing. Sal, I look forward to Friday with you. And,
yes, sir.
We got a lot of stuff in the works that we'll keep under wraps right now. But all I can say is everybody get ready for some big changes with the show.
And, absolutely.
I'll give you a hint. You're going to get to see Sal in the early morning. He's going to have to take the curlers out of his hair. But anyway, you know.
Here, buddy.
You
know,
hey, Sal, great show. And we'll talk to you next week, brother. I mean, Friday. All right, my man. Have a good one.
Take care. Have a good day.
That's Sal Rocky Senecola giving us all his insight. Hey, listen, I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, the blast from the past, Panama Al Brown with me and Alex Perpalli in about two.
The Billy C. Morning Show will be right back. Hey, fight fans, check out KOFantasyBoxing.com. KO Fantasy Boxing is boxing's only trademarked fantasy game. Check it out, www.kofantasyboxing.com. Select your own gym, your own fighters. Track them through a season that can last from 3 months to a year, depending upon which league you join. You got to check this out, man. www.kofantasyboxing.com. Join it today. Again, www.kofantasyboxing.com. And tell them Billy C sent ya.
Check out BillyCBoxing.com now, or feel the wrath of the mighty mustache.
Oh, that hurts! Why are you doing that to my face? I hate you.
That's BillyCBoxing.com. Consider this your warning.
Now, back to the Billy C Morning Show. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
What was my line again? Oh, yeah. And we're back. You're listening to the Billy C. Morning Show right here on Fight TV. Don't forget about downloading the app right now. It's www.fight.tv/Billy C. Download the app and watch us on your phone or any other handheld device. I tell you, one of our most, cherished segments of the show is due right now, to tell you.
Blast from the past. We shine the spotlight again on fighters from years past.
Marciano, top ranking, Joe Lewis is the leading contender.
Must be the greatest.
Joe Frazier with a left hook.
Good right hand thrown by Foreman that time.
Look at that left
that
hook.
Belt that goes to Ray Mancini.
It's Blast from the Past on Talkin' Boxing.
And this week's Blast from the Past, which is being sponsored by the Title Bout Championship computer game. Download yourself a copy right now by visiting our website, www.billycboxing.com, and clicking on the Title Bout Championship computer game banner, which is right there on the left-hand side, and kofantasyboxing.com. Check it out. Get in the game. www.kofantasyboxing.com. Was a request. We got a request to do this former world champion who boxed for 20 years. He's a Hall of Famer. And his name, Panama Al Brown. And to tell us all about this guy, who's a pretty unique fighter, is my man, Alex Perpalli. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Billy C. How are you?
Not too bad. And yourself?
I'm fighting a cold, which has been really miserable, but otherwise I'm doing pretty good.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's
I'm recovering nicely from the operation, and all is well.
Well, hopefully you don't have to. Hopefully you still get to stand up while you go to the bathroom, right? Which operation? Oh, that's right. No, it was the other operation. I'm sorry.
Yes, I No, my transitioning doesn't start
until
later.
Nah, we're only kidding. Don't even got, you know what? That's all I need is to start getting emails about that. I don't even know why I said that. It's not. It was a double hernia, okay, ladies and gentlemen? It was a double hernia. That's it, all right? He does undergoing no other operation, all right? Maybe he's playing the game operation, you know, but anyway.
Although the double hernia did do wonders for the size of my genitalia, that's for sure. But it wasn't a good thing.
Yeah, no, no. And unfortunately, you know, it eventually...
It's like a football down there.
Oh, God, eventually. It's, at least it wasn't like the friggin' the photo you sent me. God, I still hurt thinking about that one.
Oh, yeah.
God. I mean, how did that guy
that,
even...
That was a pre-surgery picture, that poor guy.
God, I don't know if you could even live like that. I mean, Jesus. But
yeah, remember when I was a kid, and you probably remember these too, because you're not that much older than me. Remember those, that's what it looked like, is those balls they had that had like the handle on it that you would sit on and bounce on. Remember those things?
Oh, yeah.
That's what it looked like.
It did.
That guy, Tony, was so big.
That's what it looked like, I know. And the thing is, you know, in that shot, he had like a tunic on or something like that. It's like, hey, don't say anything. What, do you think he notices? Oh, geez, I don't know, but don't say anything. It's like, how could you not notice? You know, it's like the beautiful blonde with the humongous, you know, what's and you can't look her in the eye because you can't keep. Hey guys, how you doing today? You know, but. Anyway.
Yeah, when your hernia is so large, it affects what kind of clothes you could wear.
You got a problem.
I think it's time to see a surgeon.
There's no question about that. But Panama Al Brown, you know, watching some of this guy's videos, I mean, you could see why he was so dominating. I mean, you know who I couldn't help but think of when I watched this guy fight was Tommy Hearns.
Yeah, I think Tom Hearns and Mark Breland are the guys that definitely come to mind because of his long, spidery build. The thing about it is that they're a good 30 pounds heavier than him because, you know, they're both welterweights, so that musculature was spread over a taller frame, but there's more meat on them. He was... 118, Panama Al Brown was 118 pounds soaking wet. So, and at 5'11", with a 76-inch reach, it's a pretty incredible build. The way they described him was just creatively to downright derogatory at times. They would call him a grotesque assemblage of pipe stem arms and legs. They called him elongated and spidery. They often referred to him as a lean licorice stick. But he was a badass. There's no question about it. He used that style to his advantage, popping out that jab. And, you know, when you think about it, a 76-inch reach, that's a heavyweight's reach. And to have that as a bantamweight is pretty amazing.
You know, the thing that you're right about Breland, you know, he probably more like him because of the weight, but because Tommy Hearns eventually moved up and had that upper body that was able to take on and fight at upper weight classes. But what really, I saw some footage of Panama Al Brown delivering some blows. And Tommy Hearns, one of my favorite fighters of all time, delivered punches in an awkward style, and that's where I saw the similarities. Panama Al Brown, when he would sneak in a left hook or you know, a follow-up, like you're saying, with the jab, it would come in at a weird angle. And, you know, when you add that to the reach and the height that he had, tough out, especially in the bantamweight division. And the thing that amazed me the most, and I know we're jumping way ahead of ourselves, but the thing that amazed me the most is this is a guy that fought 20 years in the ring as a pro and never left the bantamweight division except for the very, very end when he fought in the featherweight division, which is remarkable because, you know, today's fighter, you know, they win a title and they immediately move up, you know. So I don't know. Maybe it was discipline or maybe there was just more opportunities back then.
Yeah, you know, I really don't, I didn't find anything to explain why he never moved up, but it is definitely an interesting question, because most fighters, as they get older, it's harder to make the weight, but it didn't seem like that was a problem for him. Getting fights did become more difficult for him. He had a few strikes against him, especially getting fights here in this country, but... I'll get started with just the basics about him. Panama Al Brown, he was born July 5th, 1902, in Colon, Panama. His full name is Alfonso Teofilo Brown, and he was biracial. He was the son of a husky western miner and a willowy mother. His mom was from the Caribbean, and she was of African descent. And he was, like I said, a string bean of a man. And but he had real speedy footwork and quick hands and surprising power for his, spidery build. He had, like I said, a ridiculous reach of 76 inches. And he started fighting in the Panama Canal Zone as a flyweight. When the Panama Canal was being built down there, there was, American GI stationed there, and there was... the availability of some boxing, so that's where he got started. Eventually, he stowed away on a fruit boat. He ran away from Panama and stowed away on a fruit boat and came all the way to New York City and ended up training in Kid Norfolk's gym. And rather quickly, within a year, he was one of the top-ranked bantamweights in the Ring magazine. He put together a string of wins and... became, the guy to beat. He was a stylist, a defensive master. There was times where he could be less than thrilling to watch. He sort of had a couple strikes against him. He could be dull, and at this time in Jim Crow America, his other big strike was he was black. Now, the thing about him, he was, like I said, he was biracial, so he's also considered the first Latino champion. But I believe he is actually, as well, he's also the first black champion in the bantamweight division. Because I think when I looked at the list on Cyberboxing, I'm pretty sure all the guys before him are all just white guys. That was still a problem, that fighters drew the color line, and, some just wouldn't fight a black fighter. The other knock he had on him more well-known is, and he became really popular, as a lot of black fighters of this age and became real popular in Paris, France. Paris was a much more open-minded in terms of race, and you had great fighters like Sam McVay battling Siki, who became big stars in France. And, of course, the first heavyweight title that featured two African-American combatants, Jack Johnson versus battling Jim Johnson, was held in Paris. I don't know if it was Paris, but it definitely was France. Sam Langford had a terrific career in France as well. Same thing with Joe Jeanette. Panama Al Brown, he spoke three different languages, English, French, and Spanish. He could play multiple instruments and became very... the guy to see in the nightlife in Paris, in the jazz clubs. At the time, the two biggest stars in Paris were black, Josephine Baker and himself, Panama Al Brown. And he did a little show that was popular for a time. He tap danced and sang, and he would skip rope to an orchestra, to orchestra music. But evidently, the reviews weren't great about his singing. Like somebody else we've done, it did get to a point where Paris sort of soured on him and his style, and that he could put a lot of asses in seats, not only fans, but people wanted to see him lose. And unfortunately, in some of the fights that he had, and there was one fight he had against Kid Francis in 1932 in July. The crowd was so upset with one of the judges who gave Brown the decision that the crowd actually beat up the judge and tore his scorecard to shreds.
Oh, those boxing fans. I wonder why we don't get the recognition that we deserve, you know?
I know. Nowadays, all you get is a real angry rant from Teddy Atlas.
Yeah, well, occasionally they do throw, not in the U.S., but they do throw chairs and stuff around. I mean, that last thing in Canada was a bad scene. But he fought a lot. He fought and won against a lot of very accomplished fighters like Eddie O'Dowd and Harry Corbett. Also Eugene Hart, which was a big name, Pete Sandstall, Kid Francis, like you mentioned, Johnny King, Young Perez a couple of times. You know, he also fought some big names and came battling Nelson. He won, came up short against Speedy Dotto and Freddie Miller, Hall of Famer, and some fighters that people have heard of that he came up short. But, you know, you mentioned he fought a lot in France, but he also, you know, the place that he had a really good run, really, was, didn't he fight in the Garden several times?
In Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I didn't check that, but I'm not sure if he did.
Yeah, I know early in his career he fought there a few times. Well, the only reason why I really know is because some of the footage I was watching all seemed to be out of Madison Square Garden. But he did fight abroad, it looks like, a lot. He did also fight in New York at the sporting clubs, the Commonwealth Sporting Club. You know, obviously Madison Square Garden was the big place, but he also fought, I believe, at the Polo Grounds once or twice as well. So he was a well-traveled fighter.
Yeah, I do see one Madison Square Garden. Yeah, there's definitely a few Madison Square Gardens in there in his record, yes.
Yeah, because some of the footage I was watching before we did this, obviously, I was like, oh, man, you know. As a matter of fact, he fought in New York a lot in the clubs, you know, in the sporting clubs. You know, not only Madison Square Garden, but the Olympia Sporting Club and the other one, Commonwealth Sporting Club, and you know, but this is all in the early 20s, and his career did go for a long time, from 1922 to 42. He did have a hiatus, one layoff between 39 and 41, but aside from that, he was pretty consistent.
Yeah, another distinction he carries is that he may have been one of the first, or at least the first that we know of. And this was not something, he was closeted because, you know, you certainly couldn't be openly gay at this time, but he was linked to the French poet Jean Cocteau, who actually managed his career for a little while. It's very likely they were lovers, gay, and it's possible, it's very probable actually, that the National Boxing Association here in the U.S. was, you know, rather conservative-minded group, and they may have, you know, that was, you know, at one point they stripped him because, you know, they weren't too excited about having a homosexual fight for their title. So that was another strike against him, and I think that's another thing that was really unfortunate. He made an awful lot of money in the ring, especially in Paris. He was worth about $280,000, and when the Nazis rolled into France, he got out of there. You know, a biracial homosexual is probably not going to fare well under a Nazi regime. So he fled, and he lost all his money. The Nazis took it. You know, I guess when they conquered, they took over the banks and stuff, and he never got that back. So by the time he passed away, he was penniless.
Jean Cocteau, huh? A gay guy. I wouldn't have never thought that. But I guess some of the Nazis that took all his money are in the YouTube chat room right now, huh?
Yeah, I think they are.
But this Panama Al Brown was a talented fighter. I mean, for a guy that was tall and lanky like he was, he could move around the ring pretty well. And like you mentioned earlier, he definitely was smart enough to utilize his jab, height, and arm reach to set up his opponents. And, you know, his career was nothing less of spectacular. You know, you mentioned that he passed away. His last fight, actually, he won. you know, a lot of times we see these fighters, you know, a downward spiral. And he got a win over Battling Nelson in 1941, knockout win. And then followed that up with a knockout win over Kid Fortune. Then he lost back-to-back fights, and these were all in Panama City. Lost back-to-back fights to a fighter named Eduardo Carrusco, who I never heard of. Had a 15-round draw with Licadio Torres in 1942. And then finally, his last pro fight against Kid Fortune on December 4th, 1942, was a 10-round decision. And he hung him up for good. Now, what did he do? I know he didn't live for another 10 years. Had he started getting sick in 1942? Did that cause him to retire, or did he start into other work? I don't know what he did after his last fight against Kid Fortune until his death in 1951.
He eventually, the cause of death was tuberculosis.
Right.
Now, I am not too familiar with that disease, but I believe that it does sort of eat you up slowly.
Well, that Joe Gans died of that. A lot of fighters didn't. Joe Gans died of tuberculosis too. That's that disease that they had no cure for. You know.
Yes, I think it was also referred to as consumption, and it did sort of turn you into a skeleton. It's a disease of the lungs. You know, you're eventually coughing up blood, and you sort of waste away.
And what they used to do, believe it or not, up here in the Adirondacks, and then out west in the mountains, they used to bring people that were, in order to treat tuberculosis, they used to bring people to cold climates, snowy, cold weather, and sit them outside. Apparently, it helped their lungs, but once you contracted tuberculosis, it was a slow death sentence, and it appears that that's kind of what happened to Panama Al Brown. Do you know what he did after boxing?
I'm not sure about what he did after boxing, but he also he suffered from a cocaine addiction, which he sort of blamed on boxing, that some of the aches and pains, and maybe I would think that maybe some of it was from training, but he sort of got hooked on cocaine, as a painkiller. That was one of the things that he had been arrested for cocaine here in this country, and he eventually got deported. That's what led to the deportation, was the cocaine arrest. But when he died, he passed out. He fainted on 42nd Street in New York City, and the cops arrested him. They just thought he was drunk, and they brought him to the station, and it wasn't... It was a few hours before they realized, no, this guy's more than drunk. He's sick. And they brought him to the hospital where he passed away.
They said, he's more than drunk. He's sick. And the other guy said, he's dead.
he's dead. By the time he got to the hospital, that was it.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's a shame.
And yeah, so he's another one of these guys who, sort of a comet of the sport, who burns real hot and leaves a scar across the sky and... burns out pretty young. I mean, he's only 48 or so.
Yeah, he was 48 years old. He died April 11th, 1951. Title bout championship, who'd you put him in with?
I put him in against one of our best bantamweights of today, Shinsuke Yamanaka. And let's see the results here. Okay, so the first time they fought... Panama Al Brown won a unanimous decision. He dropped Yamanaka in the fourth round, and he went on to win with scores of 117 to 111 three times. When they fight 100 times, Panama Al dominates. He scored 81 victories, 17 defeats, and 2 draws with 39 KOs, and Yamanaka was able to score 8 KOs in his 17 victories.
Hey, you know what? Hold that thought out, Alex. We got to take a short break, and we'll be right back, and we'll finish up this, and I got a couple other questions to ask you. All right? All right, sounds good. We'll be right back.
The Billy C. Morning Show will be right back.
Hey, fight fans. Check out KOFantasyBoxing.com. KO Fantasy Boxing is boxing's only trademarked fantasy game. Check it out, www.kofantasyboxing.com. Select your own gym, your own fighters. Track them through a season that can last from 3 months to a year, depending upon which league you join. You got to check this out, man. www.kofantasyboxing.com. Join it today. Again, www.kofantasyboxing.com. And tell them Billy C sent ya.
Now let's dig into our archives and hear a rare interview when Billy C. first became the champion of Boxing Talk Radio. Hello, Billy C. As the new champ, can we ask you a few questions?
Why, certainly.
Okay, your fans would like to know how you and your corner have successfully walloped the competition.
We're not ordinary people. We're morons.
Anything else?
I'm a victim of circumstance.
Did your success finally come when you made the show 5 days a week for 2 hours? What do you think?
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Now, please tell the listeners what you've learned from making it this far.
Certainly. If you place you don't succeed, keep on sucking till you do succeed.
Great words of wisdom, Billy C. Keep up the great work as the undisputed People's Champion with your show, Talkin' Boxing with Billy C. Any last words to anyone who's listening?
This is your fault, you bonehead.
Check out BillyCBoxing.com now, or feel the wrath of the mighty mustache.
Oh, that hurts! Why are you doing that to my face? I hate you. I hate you.
That's BillyCBoxing.com. Consider this your warning.
Now back to the Billy C. Morning Show. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the Billy C. Morning Show. Don't forget about the Turning Stone Resort and Casino. March 11th, great fight up there between Curtis Stevens and David Lemieux. Get yourself some tickets right now. Visit our website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the fight poster, which is on the right-hand side. Don't forget, I'm going to be ringside. So come on up and watch a great night, which incidentally is being on HBO. It's going to be, what's the word I'm looking for, damn it. It's going to be shown on HBO After Dark, so check that out. And I'll be glad to take a scotch, and not that I've had a few already. But joining me now, Alex Papali. We took an impromptu break. You know, I had too much coffee. I just couldn't go through the rest of the show, man. I had to run out there, but we were in the
middle. Yeah, I was going to say, is that what happened? But I didn't. I guess I didn't stay on the channel long. I got a couple of windows open. I didn't see you get up, so I was like, did he have to use the bathroom?
Yeah, man, I tell you, you know, it's like, you know, I'm a coffee guy in the morning, you know, and usually it's hard to go the full show without running, especially when you get to be my age. I'm like that commercial now, you know, I keep going and going and going. And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm not going to make it. I'm sorry, Alex, we got to take a break. So we're right in the middle of doing the title bout championship computer game. With Panama Al Brown, and you told us that his first fight against Yamanaki, he won. How did he do 100 times?
Out of the 100 times, he dominated, and he scored 81 victories, 17 defeats, two draws, and of those wins, he scored 39 KOs, and of Yamanaka's 17 wins, he was able to stop Panama Al Brown 8 times.
Anyone else, or you just put him up against him?
You know, I just put him in against him. You know, I was thinking of maybe putting him in against Chocolatito, but he was a flyweight too early in his career. You know, so I didn't want to. I didn't do that.
Great job as usual, Panama Al Brown. 20 years in the ring. He had a career record, 129 wins, 59 by knockout, 19 losses with 13 draws. Now, he did fight during the newspaper decision era where he had another 3 fights, 2 wins and 1 loss. He fought a total of almost 1,400 rounds, 164 fights with a knockout ratio of 36%. He died. He was a former world bantamweight champion. He was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 1992. This guy was really popular. I just want to add one thing. Was really popular. He used to draw huge crowds during his workouts, which is something that really doesn't happen today. I mean, a big, big, highly publicized fight, yeah, maybe. But this guy would generally bring crowds. It's strange to see a guy go up and down like Panama did with the press and the public, you know. And I guess his lifestyle and some of the places he lived dictated that. But anyway, great job, Panama Al Brown, our blast from the past. And as usual, great job with that. Alex,
thank you.
I wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions before we pack it in today. First and foremost, you know, to me, it's refreshing to see a young fighter like Errol Spence challenging himself and fighting another fighter that has, in my opinion, made at least the second half of his career in fighting nothing but the best in Kell Brook. What's your thoughts on this fight being announced that it's going to be taking place at some point at the end of May?
I'm very excited. I think that's going to be a really good fight. It may be a little too much for Errol Spence, because I think Kell Brook is no joke. But at the same time, I think, that, like you said, it's great that a young fighter is challenging himself with a big fight, big contest like that. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I think I am going to go with the young guy. I think Errol Spence is going to win. I think he's going to surprise us, and I think he is as good as people are thinking he is.
You know, Errol Spence, what I admire about this kid is that he's willing to take chances, you know, and they're you know, I always find ourselves talking about, you know, the negativity surrounding the sport and how it's never going to be back to the way it was. And although I believe that it never will be back to the way it was, I do see an infusion, small, but an infusion of some fighters today that are stepping up to the challenge, Alex. And Errol Spence is one of these guys. So is Kell Brook. So is Daniel Jacobs, for that matter, you know, stepping in with Triple G. You know, so is Carl Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz fighting each other multiple times. You know, I mean, you know, with what we have in this post-Mayweather era where so many fighters are trying to emulate his blueprint for success by, you know, picking the right fights at the right time, the least amount of risk for the maximum amount of reward. Then the Deontay Wilders pounding their chest saying they're the best who's never fought anyone. To see these kinds of guys like Kell Brook and Errol Spence fighting each other, or Triple G and Daniel Jacobs fighting each other, and like I mentioned, Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton. I mean, it's a breath of fresh air, and maybe, you know, they could do well enough with the fights themselves, which thankfully so far the ones that have taken place have been exciting. Maybe we can get back on the right track. What's your quick thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think we should be all that surprised about it. I think that that was one of the things that I think was pretty cool about, remember that old reality show, The Contender? That was one of the things that you found out very quickly in that show is the fighters all wanted to fight the best guy they could. I think that that has changed a bit, and I think you got to blame Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather. They were highly selective throughout their careers as they got better and better and could dictate, you know, who they wanted to fight. And I think that is where we ended up seeing matchups that were less than spectacular. But I think that most fighters, it's in their nature to want to challenge themselves against the very best that's out there, the very best that's available to them. And I think that's what we're seeing now, like you mentioned, in Daniel Jacobs, in Errol Spence. I think you also got to think about it in Anthony Joshua. You know, so I do think that I think it's only good for the sport. It brings fans in, and it's what people want to see. Like we talked about with Salvador Sanchez last week, boxing is a young man's game. You know, so much of it relies on reflexes. Well, your best reflexes are when you're young. So the idea of, you know, letting fights marinate and then hope for a big payday down the road, that model is sort of counterintuitive when it comes to your own physiology. You want to fight when you're young, you know, when you're sharp. I think that's one of the reasons why the Manny-Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight was such caca, was both of the guys were past their prime. It would have been a lot more interesting of a fight, you know, 2 years earlier.
Right.
So I do think that we're seeing an age where, and it maybe that's why things are looking better, more promising this year, is that all those things that have happened have sort of sunk in to fighters, and so some of the best matchups are trying to be made now.
You know, one thing I want to just throw in about the analogy made between Floyd Mayweather and Roy Jones Jr., not that I disagree with you at all, because I don't, but, you know, there was one startling difference to me. Roy Jones never, I mean, yes, he handpicked his opponents, you know, especially he's doing it now, too, but he never tried to make it like his opponent was a killer. He just picked him, and it was his baseball he got to pitch, and that was the end of that, you know, and he put on a show. Floyd Mayweather, on the other hand, you know, part of the promotion, always tried to make the opponents that he faced the toughest fight, the best guy out there. You know what I mean? That's the way they tried to spin it, and a lot of people bought into that bullshit. So one last thing, speaking of Mayweather, this talk about Mayweather fighting Conor McGregor, you know, I have a feeling the fight is going to happen. And it bothers me, not so much for the fight, because I believe that both Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, if they wanted to give the people what they want and they're in a position to make, you know, $100 million to fight, more power to them and more power to all the people that are involved that will have their hand in that cookie jar. But what I have a hang up with is this is a WWE type matchup. This certainly isn't a true boxing fight, and I really hate the thought that Mayweather would get to parade around, because he's going to destroy Conor McGregor in the boxing ring, that he gets to parade around and say he's 50-0 with a guy that's never stepped in the ring to fight in a boxing match. What's your quick thoughts?
Yeah, I think it should be considered an exhibition, you know, when and if they do fight. I don't know if it is going to happen. You know, I mean, it's sort of ridiculous following the story. I did read the article that Kevin Ioli did yesterday, which, you know, makes it seem like it is getting closer. However, if you read the article, there's also in it Mayweather saying it's not going to happen. So I do think that, you know, it just, Mayweather likes to do this. He likes to keep his name in the headlines. The potential of a fight is sort of pristine, and you could imagine anything happen. But the reality of a fight is a lot more dangerous. I think that this fight is a lot more fun to him discussing it and discussing how much money it would be and people saying how easy it would be for him. He likes that kind of stuff because he's the one who's sort of keeping the rumor mill rolling. Because just a few days ago, he said to, I think it was Stephen A. Smith or somebody, that it's getting close to being made.
Yes, Stephen Smith.
But then yesterday tweeted that, you know, you have to, you know, if he's going to fight anybody, he'll let you know, and to follow him, don't believe the rumors. So, you know, it's ridiculous. It's very similar to the, you know, the run-up to the Pacquiao fight. But, of course, that fight was a lot, as hard as that fight was to make, it was a lot easier to make, because at least they were athletes in the same sport and the same division. This is just a train wreck of, under what rules would they fight? Would it be UFC rules? Would it be boxing rules? There's so many things that has to be ironed out. I think most of your boxing fans don't want to see it. Because it wouldn't be a contest. I think it's UFC fans who want to see it because they believe their sport is better. Quite honestly, I don't think boxing needs it. Boxing, you know, as much as at times it seems like it's on life support, boxing's not going anywhere. You know, it doesn't need a Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor matchup to save it, and I don't think that would be the effect.
I agree. We don't need Floyd Mayweather anymore. You know, I mean, he should just stick to promotion and that's that. But Alex, great job as usual. We'll look forward to next week when we do Kevin Kelly. Right, another request.
And yeah, Kevin, the Flushing Flash.
The Flushing Flash. And if you have a request for Alex and I to do for our Blast from the Past, just drop me an email. Billy@TalkinBoxing. TalkinBoxing.com. Alex, we'll talk to you hopefully Saturday night after the fights.
Yeah, the Battle of the Adrians.
Yeah, I can't wait. I heard by fight night that the contracted weight's going to be 185. So we'll see what happens. All right, my man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Billy. See, take care.
All right, take care. That's Alex Papali. You can check him here with the Blast from the Past. Hey, listen, I just want to remind everyone, Turning Stone Resort and Casino, the return of David Lemieux, taking on Curtis Stevens, March 11th, Saturday night on HBO. Be there. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be ringside. Get yourself some tickets. And the best way to get them is visit our website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the fight poster. It's on the right-hand side. And drop me an email. Let me know you're coming and where I can meet you so you can buy me a scotch. Yeah, that's I'm nice like that, you know. So anyway, on this day, February 15th, in 1969, Rene Barrientos wins a 15-round decision over Ruben Navarro to win the vacant WBC World Junior Lightweight title. Took place in the Philippines. On this day in 1985, Lester Ellis wins a 15-round decision over Juan Kil Yeol to win the IBF World Lightweight title. Took place in Australia. On this day in 2003, Rafael Marquez knocks out Tim Austin in the eighth round to win the IBF Bantamweight title. Took place in Vegas. On this day in 1986, Cesar Polanco wins a 15-round decision over Eli Pacal to win the IBF World Junior Bantamweight title, and that took place in Jakarta. On this day in 1991, Meng Choi Kittensing KO knocks out Sot Chikalanda in the sixth round to win the WBC flyweight title. Took place in Thailand. And on this day, February 15th in 1978, Leon Spinks wins a 15-round decision over the greatest, Muhammad Ali, to win the world heavyweight title. Took place in Vegas. And speaking of Thailand real quick, I'm going to talk a little about it on the next show. Showtime's got a series coming up featuring Thailand fighters who are in jail, who are getting their chance for freedom. They're fighting for their freedom. Seems interesting. Anyway, hey, listen, make sure you tune in Friday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby.